If you want to know who killed Mr. Boddy, I did. In the hall. With the revolver. Okay, Chief, take him away. I'm gonna go home and sleep with my wife.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
It doesn't matter who done it, because we run it. It's Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. Woo! I am your host, Brian Salisbury. You know who I am. Whatever. And I am joined, of course, by my co-host. He is a lieutenant of Megaforce, which is his first and most important credit, obvi. And as well, a screenwriter on Marvel's Doctor Strange. He's C. Robert Cargill.
Hi.
Hello.
And this week...
Holy crap, this week.
We... not only have one hell of a movie, but we have one hell of a guest.
We have a guest.
We have a guest.
We are breaking from tradition in a shit ton of ways this week.
And just one way, really. This is one of my favoritest people in the world. Is somebody...
Cargill, I do the show with you every... Oh, you're not talking about me.
No. Okay. No, I said favoritist.
No. I heard it. I'm hearing it now.
She is the host of America Now Radio. You may also know her from her many appearances as a contributor on Fox News. She is, of course, one of my dearest, closest friends, Meghan McCain.
Yeah, I'm so honored. Thank you for having me. You're one of my favoritest people, too. Brian, I don't know you that well. So
that's
you're
okay.
One of my favoritest people.
You will get to know me, and you will come to learn that I am not one of your favoritest people. Okay. That's okay.
But Cargill's one of my favoritest people.
And that's awesome. And I think it's great.
I'm honored to be your first guest.
I'm honored to have you, and it's so serendipitous because I don't know if you know this about our show, but we're actually broadcast in America.
Yeah.
So it's like perfect.
I did know that.
So it you know,
thank
it just
you.
Flows together so well that you would be our first guest. Would you
say that it was broadcast in America now?
It is broadcast in America right stinking now. Right stinking now, folks. I'm not even that drunk.
It's a really good joke. So funny.
So far, so good. If you want to hear more Aces comedy like that, you can check out our back catalog of episodes on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/ you guessed it, kiddies. Junk Food Cinema. Now, that is one way the intro could have gone, but how about this? And then I just do the whole intro over again.
We should really, to stray true to form, we should do it with the ending where we have,
yes,
we have a mediocre ending, a slightly less mediocre ending, and then we have, you know, the grand all ending where everybody's the ones who fucked up.
The problem is we don't know how to do anything but mediocre endings, so...
This is true.
We can try. I mean, I'm all for trying.
We're like a mediocre massage parlor, you know, it's...
There's no happy ending for anyone? Is that what you're...
It's an all right ending. You know, you feel a little bad about it. You feel like it wasn't worth you $30, but
wasn't worth the $30 or the potential raid from the police. But you were still there, and that's something, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking about a movie today that I'm really excited because this is a movie that I watched on repeat as a kid, just constantly.
Me too.
Well, and we let our guest choose the movie, and we were talking the other night. I said, what do you want to watch? And she started rattling off a couple of movies. She's like, I can talk about this, I can talk about this, I can talk about Clue. And I'm like, Clue!
Clue.
We gotta do Clue.
Because I had to think of, like, what movie have I seen so many times? I've seen this movie. I know all the words. I couldn't even begin to tell you how many times. It was, like, an integral part of my childhood. So I want to talk about a movie I knew, obviously, very well and loved, which I do.
And you picked a good one, because we are, of course, talking about 1985's Clue.
Paramount Pictures invites you to an evening of mystery.
Let us in! Let us out!
Murder.
This is getting quite serious.
And madness. In the movie that makes a scene of the crime.
Someone did it!
Clue. It's not just a game anymore.
Based on the Parker Brothers board game. I want you to just let that sit in for a second. 1985... they made a movie based on a board game, and it fucking worked.
Yeah.
They made a movie in 2013, 2012, based on a board game with a really great director, and it tanked.
It may have tanked, but that movie's kind of amazing in very special ways.
What
Battleship.
Movie? Oh, I never saw that.
Yeah, Kirk and I are going to have to agree. Oh, it's special.
It's special
in the way that you would want to like attach mittens to its jacket all year long.
Yeah, like the Covenant or the Core.
All of these are your words. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with anything.
I mean, it didn't look good to me.
It's one of those situations where you're like, oh, you are really limited by the fact that your source material was never meant to be a 120,000 minute movie. But Clue in 1985 figures out that the best way to make the board game where you spend all evening trying to basically, it's like the game Guess Who, because it's a process of elimination situation, but with the added complement of murder.
Yeah.
So it's like, I like the game Guess Who, but there isn't enough bloodshed for my taste.
Unless you play the version with Jules Winfield.
Does he look like a bitch?
There's enough bloodshed in Clue for you?
No. There's not enough bloodshed in Guess Who.
Oh, okay.
So if you're playing the game Guess Who and you're like, not enough people are dying, that's when you switch over to play Clue. And you are like, oh, I could kill someone with a wrench or with a pipe. I don't know why I'm explaining to you guys how the game Clue works. You've played it. You're a human being listening to this show.
If you were ever a 10-year-old child, you played Clue and played half of Monopoly.
If we were talking about the film version of Uncle Wiggily, I could understand having to explain to you what that is. But Clue was a mainstay in anyone's home. If they had Monopoly, if they had Connect Four, they probably also had Clue.
I adapted a classic board game that comes out later this year, Marvel's Operation.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I cannot laugh at that.
That is like the third.
Oh,
wow.
And she's
one of your favoritest people.
Well, you could actually hear that joke thud in
yeah,
the
you,
house.
You really could.
It just kind of echoed.
I mean, Don't get me wrong. Ballsy for
that funny. I'm sorry.
Ballsy for trying it, and it's only the third nerdiest thing you've ever said. So, kudos for that.
I apologize, everybody.
You know what? I take that back. If Tim Curry is in Operation, I would watch it.
That's true.
I love Tim Curry. I watch almost anything Tim Curry's in,
including The Worst Witch.
Yeah, Tim Curry's incredible.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And
just put him in that.
Put him in everything. Ladies and gentlemen, we are advocating now to put Tim Curry in every movie that is made for the next 20 years.
You know what? We're going to start early. So for those of you playing the drinking game at home, we need to at some point do Pass the Ammo.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, Pass the Ammo is a wonderful little 80s film where Tim Curry plays a TV evangelist.
What?
Yes. And somebody's grandmother.
We get to the Book of Revelation.
Oh, it's, dude, there's a great moment in that movie where people are making, you know, because this guy has slept around with everyone, and there's this great moment where somebody's going off on Tim Curry. It's like, the crack of dawn wouldn't be safe from that man. And Tim Curry is just so, for those of you who wonder what I'm talking about, Google the trailer, check out the movie at some point. We have to talk about this, but our love of Tim Curry, that is one of my favorite Tim Curry roles ever. Pass the Ammo is just magnificent. But here, he is wonderfully magnificent in a very different
way. He is the one character missing from the game of Clue, because anytime you're talking about a murder mystery, the one character that has to be there, that is absolutely essential, is the butler.
Yeah.
And if you've ever...
Mr. Body slash the butler,
depending on
both.
Which... Yes. And so he's...
I've seen this movie a lot.
Spoiler alert. Mr. Body is all... No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we're if you have not seen Clue at this point, I'm wondering...
There's something, like, very wrong with you.
Or you spent your life living in a convent that didn't have a VCR.
Yeah, I said that. Something very wrong with you.
It's so true. It was one of those movies when I was growing up, we used to vacation in Florida, and we would always like go swim during the day and then watch a bunch of movies at night. And I think we watched it like, I'm not even kidding, like twice a week.
Nice.
I don't know why we were so obsessed with Clue, but it was one of the movies that we just watched over and over and over again.
It was one of the movies that my grandmother had in her extensive VHS collection. So when we would spend summers with her, the two movies I would watch most often were probably this one and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, except
nice
with Willy Wonka, I always fast-forwarded to the part where they actually get to the Chocolate Factory, because I'm sorry, Cheer Up Charlie's boring. No one cares. Yeah. Get over it, Emo Charlie. We're done with you. We want to get to the good stuff, which is in the actual factory. But this movie, I didn't fast forward a second because I loved every moment of it. And I feel like what was so brilliant about what they did with the movie is they took a very basic concept. By the way, story in this, a story credit is shared by director Jonathan Lynn and John Landis, which makes a lot of sense when you watch the movie, because one of the things I think that was so brilliant about the way they put this together is that they took the game and what they applied to it was the idea of a British farce. Like, if you've ever seen a British farce on stage, it's a lot of mistaken identity, a lot of body humor, a lot of people dashing from room to room trying to put body humor. I just realized why that's funny on two levels for this movie. Hello.
And some, like, dirty humor that when you're a kid you don't get.
Yes.
If you watch it as an adult, it's actually kind of dirty.
I still didn't get some of the jokes until this most recent viewing. I think that says a lot about me, but... Yeah, no, there's so much about this that they basically just took the game of Clue and said, what if the game of Clue was played out as a British farce? And it works so tremendously well. What you love about this movie is not so much the mystery element. It's the comedy beats. This is one of the best comedies I think I've ever seen.
And then the really brilliant thing they did was, since this was a game built around whodunit, they didn't want the ending spoiled for audiences, because they felt that if you knew who the killer was, you would not go and see the movie.
Sure.
That was the whole thing of the movie. So what they did is they created three endings and released it in theaters with the different ending. And most...
Recently, I had a friend tell me that, because I thought it was released with all three endings, like if they show it in the movies when you watch it on when I watch it on iTunes. But I didn't realize that they did different endings in different theaters.
And you didn't know when you were going to a theater. This was back when single screen theaters were still a very big thing.
Right.
And the single screen theaters, you wouldn't know which ending you were getting.
Yeah.
So the theater would be sent an A ending, a B ending, or a C ending.
Since I'm your first guest, and also I'm a woman in this, can I also say the fashion in this movie is everything?
Yeah.
The dresses that the women wear, Mrs. White's hat that she walks in with, Miss Scarlet's gown, her tight dress, and her jacket that she wears, and their jewelry and heels, like the fashion that they put everyone in. And even the first Mr. Body, he's wearing like spats shoes when he walks in. I mean, everything they did in this movie is on point, but the clothes are amazing.
I believe the term you're looking for is fabulous.
Fabulous. I got to add that.
No,
you two would add.
I agree with you. One of the biggest laughs I got, even as a kid from this movie, is when Madeline Kahn comes in and he says, you're going to be addressed as Mrs. White. And she says, I can't imagine why. And he takes off her cape and it's just completely inlaid with this beautiful, like, pearl colored fabric, and it's like, haha, you don't understand, you're dressed like, come on.
Yeah. Well, there's all my favorite, first of all, Madeline Kahn, forever one of the most legendary comedic actresses ever. I love her in this and in Young Frankenstein, but she's so fantastic in this movie. And all the jokes about her dead husbands, they really, I don't know, it really lasts.
Yeah,
it really stands the test of time.
Oh, but get to the thing about seeing the movie in a theater. You wouldn't know which ending you were getting unless you went to a multi-screen theater that was showing it on more than one screen, and then they would have an A ending and a B ending, and we had one of those in town, so I went and saw the movie and found out which ending I'd seen, and then went to see it again at another theater to see a different ending. And so I didn't see all three of the endings until it came out on VHS, and when I saw it, when I got the VHS, I was like, which ending's going to be on here?
What sucks about that is there's one superior ending, like you said. So if I didn't get to see the Michael McKean ending, I mean, I don't know what I'm allowed to give away in this podcast.
Oh, do it. I mean,
but who hasn't seen Clue? I mean, no offense.
Well, we're going to tell people.
Get clued in, folks.
People are going to know that we're watching it beforehand. And when they listen to this, they will either have seen it before or be gearing up to see it again or have just sat down and watched it.
Well, the Michael McKean ending, when he says, which is a joke you and I always say, I'm going to go home
and sleep with my wife.
Sleep with my wife.
Sleep with my wife. Like, that's my favorite ending of all of them.
I mean, that's the great final ending. I actually have a weird weird story with that, in which I worked at a video store for many years. And every time I would get off at the end of my shift, I would turn to one of my coworkers and right as I'm going out the door would go, "I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife." What I didn't know for years was that none of
these
kids...
You weren't actually married?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. What I didn't know for years was that none of these kids I was working with had ever seen Clue.
So they just thought you were like really forthcoming. Man.
They thought I was being they was being creepy, and they're like, "Why does Cargill always say this creepy thing at the end?" And then one of them watched Clue.
We get it. You're straight. Stop trying so hard to convince us. So funny. Cargill, not Mr. Green. Yeah.
So funny. Yes. Well, I love his character, and Michael McKean forever as well. He follows me on Twitter, not to name drop because that's a little name droppy. But when he did,
whoa! That's my job.
I was gonna say
I have one job on this podcast.
No, but nobody, like, you know, so many. I'm so jaded, and so many things don't impress me. And I was like, oh my god, he's in my two favorite movies, Clue and Spinal Tap, and he follows me on Twitter.
This entire cast is legendary.
Oh,
I
mean,
entire cast.
Right down the line. I mean, we've mentioned Madeline Kahn. We've mentioned Tim Curry.
The original Mr. Body, and again, this is because I had to prepare for this, he wasn't in anything else.
He actually was. In fact, he was in
a
movie.
Nothing significant.
Well, he was in a movie we just talked about a couple weeks ago, Nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, he's not really an actor so much as he was the lead singer of a very popular punk band at the time. And so he turns up in a couple of really weird movies, one being one of the segments of Nightmares, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and another one
which
being...
Which segment? I'm
he's the killer in the very first
that's
segment.
That's right.
And then he's in a movie that I absolutely love, directed by Penelope Spheeris, called Dudes with John Cryer.
Oh, yeah.
Which Penelope Spheeris goes on to direct, of course, Wayne's World, Decline of Western Civilization, and then another really...
Suburbia, too, right?
Yes. And then, of course, another really weird movie in the vein of Dudes, which is called The Boys Next Door. Even that character, who is in the movie for, I think, a total of about 5 minutes, you're right, is not played by a comedy legend, but is played by a very interesting piece of... someone who is very interestingly cast in this, like, punk rock leading man.
And he's great in it.
Oh, I mean, he is.
I love when
yeah.
he's like, "I suggest we all leave."
Yeah.
At the dinner party. I mean, and I like when he tries to break the glass and then the dogs bark at him. I mean,
yeah.
He's great. He looks great.
Which is, you know what's funny about that scene, though? What's funny about that scene to me is that they go out of their way at the beginning of this movie to set up the two German shepherds.
Yeah.
Like, you see them over and over again.
Because they go, "Sit." And
yes.
then Mr. Green sits.
And he's like, "No, not you." Uh-huh. And then there's like all this recurring, this running gag about everyone thinks they stepped in dog shit. But then the dog that barks at the window is a Doberman Pinscher. Where did that Doberman come from? They've established the hell out of...
Were there two?
Were two German shepherds, which they established the hell out of, and then the dog that attacks him at the window is a Doberman Pinscher.
Are you saying that the German shepherds were just a red herring?
The German shepherds were, in fact, a red herring.
Communism is just a red herring.
Pretty much everything in this movie.
I love saying that, too.
Yes.
By the way, saying communism is just a red herring.
Every time I have to mention in a conversation about a film where something is a misdirect, usually when you're talking about...
I should apologize to your audience. I'm getting over a cold. That's why I'm coughing. So apologies.
Oh, you're not just gagging on the insight that I'm making? It's not just repulsing you that much?
No.
Okay, well, that's fair.
Do you know what is also another interesting thing about this movie? Because, again, now I've had to think about it because I knew I was doing your podcast, is that... Obviously, I work in politics. My father's a senator, and there's this whole scandal. Mrs. Peacock's a senator's wife,
yes.
And they all like work in government in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was growing up, I told Cargill this earlier. My mom like hated that the senator's wife was this like old, frumpy lady with like a horrible peacock hairpiece. And I don't know if like I like it because it's like funny to think about senators' wives. What are they putting greenbacks under? What is it
under the stalls of the men's room door? And
yes.
What do you think of that? I think it stinks. How do you know you weren't in that men's room? The wit of this script here, and then like the again, this just harkens back to really great farces. Is that is so witty, and the repartee is so fast.
Yes,
that I agree with you. I think that there are a lot of things that as you watch this movie, you'll have to watch it two or three times to catch every single joke. One of the ones that I didn't catch until I was much older was Professor Plum, played by Christopher Lloyd. Mm-hmm. Again, guys, this cast is phenomenal.
He's one of my favorites.
He's so good. He's so good. And in this movie, he talks about how he's working for the World Health Organization, which is the WHO, but he works for the World Health Organization, which is a branch of the United Nations organization. So he literally works for you know who. I did not get that for many years afterwards because they just threw out the acronyms but never said the whole thing. And it took me years to be like, oh, he works for you-know-who. That's kind of funny because it's a whodunit.
Kind of a dirty guy.
Oh, it, they're all like, know? Yeah, they
like, and he's all over Miss Scarlet the entire yeah. time. And then
and
I
why
like,
wouldn't you be?
Yeah, she's amazing in that movie, obviously. But I like that, you know, his whole scandal was a sex scandal because he slept with one of his patients. And then, you know, there's so many running jokes about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the first time, the first time we meet him, he's picking up Miss Scarlet on the side of the road with her car broke down. And then as soon as they get to the door, he's grabbing her ass. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the least perverted character in this entire movie is Mr. Green. Like, I feel like the...
And he's gay.
And he's gay. And, like, his whole scandal is just that he's a homosexual.
Except that
was his only scandal.
That was it.
That's the one thing, though, that it doesn't stand the test of time that you could never put in a movie now is, like, his scandal that he's being blackmailed for is just that he's gay. And he's like, I don't want to out myself.
And he's the only one. If you notice in that scene, this is so great. And this is, like, first of all, we should mention, it takes place in, like, 1955,
yeah.
I believe.
Which is why that would still
work. That works. But the funniest part about that scene to me is everyone. I mean, let me just do a brief overview if you aren't familiar with the plot here. All of these people are summoned to an old house. In New England, where it is revealed that they are all being blackmailed by the same person for different reasons. And in the course of revealing this, every single one of them, their sin for which they're being blackmailed is revealed. And Wadsworth, the butler, played by Tim Curry, is revealing all this. And my favorite part about that scene is he has had to just talk about some of, like, a doctor sleeping with his patient, a senator's wife selling secrets, like a woman who runs a whorehouse for senators specifically. He has, like, stone face. But as soon as Mr. Green gets up and says, I work for the government and I'm a homosexual, there's this look on his face like, oh, my God.
And Peacock is like, oh, my God.
Yeah, everyone's just, like, so judgmental.
After they say all these horrible scandals.
Yes, in a room full of completely degenerate people, they can't believe he's homosexual.
Mrs. White's husband was found on his back with his penis cut off, but him being a homosexual.
It's somehow worse. Yeah. Somehow that's Great worse. Sin. And I think that moment is so hilarious to me.
Colonel Mustard, though.
Colonel Mustard, played by Martin Mull.
Mustard, don't let's be silly.
Mustard, don't let's be silly. You know, I never miss an opportunity to do an Edwin impression. But yeah, like, so Colonel Mustard, first of all, I want to, like, the costuming is not simply a matter of everyone looking fabulous, which they do. They really do find ways to incorporate the colors of the actual pieces of the game into the character's wardrobe. And I think Colonel Mustard's might be my favorite because the kind of, like, gold mustard color of his tie and everything is very subtly done that if you're not really looking for it, you might actually miss it. Whereas obviously Miss White, they make a big joke out of her cloak being white, but then at that point, the only thing, the whitest thing about her is actually her pale colored skin. But yeah, I do like the way that they incorporate elements of the actual game, the colors of the game pieces into the characters themselves through the costuming.
They had so little to work with in context of adapting the game that you have to adapt that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
That stuff had to be there or else it's just like, why are we watching Murder by Death with glue names?
Murder by Death. This is we'll get into that in a second. I do want to talk about Murder by Death because it's a very interesting pair of films.
You told me too, Brian, before I started, that this movie didn't do well when it first came out, which surprises me.
Yeah.
And I want to know, because you guys are the movie buffs, why do you think it has become such a cult classic?
I think part of the reason that it's become such a cult classic is just the sheer amount of talent in this movie. I think since this movie came out, like, don't get me wrong, the people in this movie, a lot of them were already recognized as being, you know, comedic heavyweights by the time this movie comes out. But I think they all have earned sort of an extra level of legendary status in the years since. Like, I feel like it's one of those movies that a lot of college kids discover, you know, in their first couple of years at school. It gets handed around a lot, and it's just something that you pick up later in life.
Well, it was also, the thing is this is a rated PG comedy.
Yeah.
Which,
by the way, would not be, it would, like, PG-13 for sure.
Yeah, but this came out right as PG-13 was first being bandied about.
Yes.
And would have been PG-13, but it was a PG comedy that kids could laugh at and adults could laugh at that came out in the early VHS era. And the thing about the early VHS era is every video store you went to had the same 400 tapes. and you would go into the video store, and they would have the row of cheap horror stuff that was sold super cheap. It's why every single video store in the early to mid 80s had a copy of Slumber Party Massacre, because they sold it for like $20, so normally they were like yeah. $90 a tape. And you'd find stuff like Morons in Space, with it, you know, just these things that would be sold super cheap. And Clue was one of those big budget movies that they sold cheaper as a VHS because it had bombed. And so every video store had it, and it was something that, hey, what do we watch? Well, we can watch this with the kids. Yeah. And it was a movie that then played on HBO constantly, and who anyone of, you know, a certain age, like all of us, grew up watching it over and over again as 31. Kids. Because it was accessible and it was around. It was something that mom and dad could watch and laugh at, and the kids could laugh at, but we were laughing at different jokes. And like Grease, it's a movie that grows up with you. Yeah. It's a movie that as you get older, you start realizing how subtle so much of that humor was, and how you were really watching a sex film the whole time.
Yeah.
Even though you thought you were watching a goofy comedy about high school. Like, well, it's,
and we haven't even talked about, like, when you get into the film more, watching it and the orgy scene, which is, again, not racy. Like, I was watching this when I was very young. I mean, 9, 10, something like
that.
It's
an orgy scene with the added comedic element of necrophilia.
Yeah, because the cook with this, she's got a knife in her back, etc. Like, the orgy scene, and then the cop that's like, all of this is legal. Don't worry. And he was like, I didn't know America was that legal. Like,
this is a free country. I didn't know it was that free.
It was that free. Like, I love those elements. And then I love the J. Edgar Hoover jokes. Like,
so many J. Edgar Hoover jokes.
Well,
he's on everyone else's phone. Why shouldn't it be on mine? Like, J. Edgar Hoover was tapping phones. That's
and
a funny joke.
J. Edgar Hoover mention is in all of the endings. When they're like, what, that phone call from J. Edgar Hoover was for me.
Right.
And every single one of them. I don't know. I love the J. Edgar Hoover.
I wonder, too, if this maybe fell into the gap of, it's a movie that's released in the 80s that takes place in the 50s. So you have young people in the 80s maybe looking at this as something that's outdated for them.
Well, no, this is something we've talked about a couple of times. The 80s fetishized the 50s the way that the 90s fetishized the 70s, and like how we are right now fetishizing the 80s.
Right. No, I get that. But I'm saying, like, if you think about the youth culture in 1985, maybe they take one look at this movie and assume it's old hat, it's old fashioned, not for them. Whereas the older audiences watch this and go, this is really raunchy. This is, so maybe it's one of those things where it kind of,
you feel like that's why people were scared.
Yeah. Maybe that's why it didn't do as well.
And one of the other things I remember from the time was people thinking it was silly that they made a movie out of a board game. Like, this was not,
it is entirely silly that they made a movie out of a board game. That is incorrect.
No. But that's this particular era, you know, we are coming out of, this is 85. We are coming out of one of the greatest patches of time for genre film in history. I mean, we went from, you know, Jaws and Star Wars creating the summer blockbuster into going into the summer of 82, which is the greatest summer in history, followed up by the summer of 84, which is the second greatest summer in history. And here we are in 85, and we get a few more masterpieces that come out, but here's this silly, you know, Ghostbusters had just come out the year before, and it's this fresh comedy. And, you know, we've got sequels, but we've got sequels to these really original things. And here's this thing where it's like, we've run out of ideas and we're making a board game, and people are like, all right. Also, I know some people felt cheated by the fact that, what do you mean I didn't see the real ending of the movie? I saw one ending of the movie.
If there was one film that I'm ever jealous that I didn't get to see in its original run in theaters, it is absolutely this film, because I would love to have seen this movie at a different time from some of my friends and be talking about it at a bar and discussing the ending and everybody accusing everyone else of not actually having seen the movie. Like, what are you talking about? That's not how the movie ends. You didn't even see it. Like, and just like everyone being convinced that they're insane because it's like, we saw the same movie. How are the endings different?
But again, two of the endings are only okay, and one ending is by far superior, and they all did it.
Now, the ending you're talking about, where Mr. Green turns out to be the person that the call for J. Edgar Hoover was for, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the ending where everybody did it.
Yes.
Everybody did it.
Yeah, every single person involved
killed someone,
and they're all guilty, and the only person not guilty is the secret FBI agent who's really a heterosexual, and that's the big punchline at the end of the movie is, oh, hey, by the way, I wasn't really gay.
Are you a cop?
No, I'm a plant.
A plant? I thought men like you were usually called a fruit.
Yeah. That joke's funny. It's so good. It's all funny. The jokes are good. All the randomly running around from room to room making these, you know, very lurid remarks and, you know, everybody thinking that
when
someone's
they
a killer.
Draw straws to yes. go upstairs and downstairs. I remember thinking that was really scary. And I liked that Yvette and Mr. Green were put together because all the guys wanted to go with a hot, you know.
Yeah, right day. Before they, you're right. Right before they draw straws, she's like, the attic is dark. Will someone go with me? And all the men are like, I'll go. And he goes, no, thank you. Just this very quiet. And then he just turns and walks away. It's just so subtle. I like
that
so much.
It's the old Fred and Daphne bit. You know, it's like, hey, Scoob, why don't you take Shaggy, take Scoob and Velma downstairs, and we'll go check the attic.
Just riddled with herpes, that poor girl. Daphne. It's true. But one of my favorite things about this movie is that because they were confined by the structure of the game, which if you've never played the game, Mr. Body is sort of just the MacGuffin. He's the person that has been killed, which is why his name is Mr. Body. It doesn't matter who he was. The whole point of the game is to figure out who killed him, where, and with what. So they actually have to add all these additional characters so that they're not killing each other in the movie. Because it's like, in order to have multiple victims and have like to advance the mystery, they have to introduce characters who are there just to die. And I think the perfect culmination of that is the singing telegram girl.
I know, I always felt so bad for her. Immediately.
And I remember when I was a kid.
Your singing telegram.
Boom!
It's true.
The part I laughed at the most as a kid, I would have to rewind it like 15 times.
I feel like I thought that part was hilarious too.
It's so funny, and it makes you feel so bad at yourself for laughing. But it's so funny that she gets to the end of her little spiel, and it's like, oh, well, you're gone now. That's too bad. But yeah, I remember that being the part that I laughed at the most as a kid. She finishes the song, there's a gunshot, and she just collapses. And then later, when they're going through and finding the additional victims, they just kind of open the door, look at her, and then close the door like, yep, there's another one.
Like another dead body.
Yeah, they've just become so jaded to it by that point. It's like, oh, well, there's another one. One of the things I did want to mention, funny enough, we were talking about the cast, which, of course, is Tim Curry, Michael McKean, Christopher Lloyd, hello, not Ride at all, Martin Mull, Lee Ving. One of the people that was almost
that
in this movie
call from J. Edgar Hoover
was for me, whatever, get off the phone,
it's so weird.
Lead pipe. Conservatory. Don't even know what's in that room. But one of the people who was almost in this movie was Carrie Fisher. Carrie Fisher was supposed to play Miss Scarlet, but couldn't because right before they started shooting, she got sent to rehab. So sad, sad that we almost got. We almost got Carrie Fisher added to this cast.
She'd be as good. Scarlet.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that she would have been either. There's something like it. It seems. I'm thinking about her career, and I don't know, maybe Cargill can help me with this, but, like, comedies from Carrie Fisher seem to be...
Oh, no, she's incredibly funny.
I've learned that.
Well, I mean, she's one of the heavies in When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, good,
and
yeah.
And Burbs.
There you go, okay. There we go. Just needed something to knock the cobwebs out, but yeah.
Oh yeah, she's in Blues Brothers.
Oh, of course, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, no, we had a call from the peanut gallery over there going, Blues Brothers, motherfucker, Blues Brothers, and it's like, yes, Blues Brothers.
That's very true.
That was totally my idea. Yeah, that was me.
And I don't know how Carrie Fisher would have felt about being absolutely, totally upstaged by Madeline Kahn. And Madeline Kahn has one of the single greatest speeches.
Is this the flames?
Yes.
On the side of my face.
Which was apparently completely ad-libbed and is her confession.
I love that
yes,
so much.
I did it. I hated her so much that
flames on the side of my face, breathing, breath, heaving breaths, heaving.
Like completely loses her own train of thought about halfway through. And just keeps going until Wadsworth's like, and the next murder.
Well, I think anybody who is ever with Madeline Kahn got upstaged. I mean, let's be honest here. I don't think there's anyone that she hasn't stolen a scene from.
But
the thing with Carrie Fisher, you know, Carrie Fisher was ended up in When Harry Met Sally because she was brought in to rewrite it because she became a screenwriter and is known as one of the greatest script doctors in the history of Hollywood. She would just silently come in and fix movies, and she was brought in to fix When Harry Met Sally and made it much funnier. And then they're like, you should be in it. It should be you and Bruno Kirby as this other couple. And that's how she ended up in that movie. I think she would have been great here, but I think, again, this cast has such a dynamic chemistry that it's so perfect that there isn't a weak link in the cast I think that maybe that would have broken things up a little bit.
And her name's Leslie Ann Warren,
yes.
Right? Is that who plays her? So mm-hmm. I love her because she was in this other Disney movie that I watched growing up called The Happiest Millionaire, which is like about this millionaire that has a bunch of crocodiles. And it's like, I know it's really...
I think you were just watching Live and Let Die. Too.
No, and she's great.
Live and Let Die.
No, she's really good in it too. And I just think she's like this, I don't know, she's one of those actresses. Here, I'm looking it up right now. She's one of those actresses that just had so many movies growing up that I loved. And I think she's fantastic. And she's also sexy and dirty in that role. Like, one of my favorite things, which is like something, if I can ever integrate this into anything in my life, I will do it, when she's like, I enjoy getting presents from strange men. Like, it's a great comment, and it's a really weird thing to say. And like, she gets does she get the candlestick?
Wow, yes, she does.
I have seen this movie.
That is incredibly specific.
I've seen this movie.
I love how you just outdropped a movie on Brian and proved that you could hang.
Yeah, well done.
What it's called The Happiest Millionaire, is that right?
I'm just saying, I still
it's a
think
really
you're,
good old Disney
I still
movie.
Think you're talking about Live and Let Die, because if I'm Yaphet Kotto and I have crocodiles, I am also a happy millionaire. I'm a
like
Bond villain, but
crocodiles that have like, no, this millionaire that has crocodiles as pets, and it's like a love story, and it's a really, you know, when Disney was like making movies
mostly with Kurt Russell, like all those family movies with Kurt Russell.
Our friend is coming over to show you.
Yes. Okay.
That's great.
All right.
Yeah, no, this is, you're talking about the era when Disney was making all these really badass, cool, weird live action films like The World's Greatest Athlete and
The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes.
The old Kurt Russell stuff for Disney was great. I love that Kurt Russell was a Disney kid.
Yeah.
Fred McMurray is in it, apparently.
That is not surprising at all, because if it doesn't have Kurt Russell, it has Fred McMurray.
Yeah, it's about, just trust me, it's about a millionaire and their crocodiles, and it's great.
I think we have a film we have to seek out and check out in
we're
the future.
Have to check that out.
I think she has just enacted the drink.
One of the other characters that we've not talked about much is Yvette, the French maid, because if you have a butler and it's a house of affluence, obviously the other thing you have is a French maid who looks like she got her costume from a
Halloween store.
From a sex store.
My favorite part about Yvette is she was like, I'll keep something warm for him. And then, what do you have in mind? That still holds up. That joke still holds up.
It absolutely does. But
I don't think I honestly, rewatching this, I don't think there's a single
joke. There's not a clunker line in the entire movie this day.
It really works. It's a film that, it's funny. I go to a lot of conventions, and it's rare that I don't go to a convention and find somebody watching Clue at some point. Like, it is still kind of this beloved cult film.
I have seen it so many times, and I still watch it as an adult. Like, I have to take the train to DC all the time, and it's one of those movies that I'll just like zone out and watch over and over and over again. Obviously I've seen it 10 million times, but I don't know why it's so good, but I love it a lot. And like, I love watching when new kids, like my friends have kids, and I'm always like, don't let your kids watch some of this dumb crap on TV. Don't make them watch Dora the Explorer. Make them watch Clue.
I think it does have that rare combination of great slapstick and dialogue that's as sharp as the knife that ends up killing the cook. Like, it still works. Like, every joke still works, whether that's, you know, a witty repartee or the moment where the candlestick inexplicably falls off the shelf and hits Wadsworth in the head, and he collapses in like a 3-point fall.
He's like, I'm shouting.
Bing, dropped to the knees forward, is so perfect. It is like Dick Van Dyke level perfect slapstick.
So good.
And I think that's what
secret passageways
that actually are the same as the secret passageways in the game. Like, I mean, say what you want about this being based on a game and how that's like a board game and how that's a silly construct. They, as much as they kind of took that in their own direction, they held true to the game in a lot of really weird ways. One of them being that the passageways actually go from the rooms and to the rooms that they went to on the game board.
Again, there really wasn't much to adapt.
That's true.
And so they stuck to it. And I think that's what really worked about this. And I think to compare it to Battleship is kind of funny in that we're like, how do we adapt this? And it's like, well, it's going to be ridiculous, so let's make it a ridiculous comedy. And then with Battleship, it's like, well, it's going to be ridiculous. And you go, yeah, but audiences won't care. We'll just take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And so you end up with a movie that is only appreciated by someone like me who is howling with laughter at just how ridiculous the movie is and how they try to shoehorn in the big giant pegs going
into
ships.
That ship got pegged. That may be the dirtiest joke we will mention in this entire show, despite the fact that we're talking about Clue.
Who doesn't
that
like a good
battleship got pegged?
Who doesn't like a good pegging?
That's is a question I leave for the audience in their personal time to answer. Yeah,
it's
No, it's, you're
it's
fine.
Taylor Kitsch.
Remember those three movies he was really big in? Yeah.
It's so funny. I was just talking to someone the other day about how is he in any? He was in True Detective, right?
True Detective season two, which is his best role ever.
He was great in True Detective.
Yeah, but then he was in a bunch of movies that didn't really work.
He became notorious for a while of being the leading man in movies that were like, too bad.
It's John Carter. Oh.
We're going to make a big screen version of John Carter of what? No one cares anymore? Shit. Well,
John Carter of Favreau left for Iron Man?
Maybe the smartest thing Favreau's ever done. Let's be real. But so I want to talk a little bit. We mentioned this before. We kind of teased this a bit. The movie Murder by Death, which is actually precedes this film by almost a decade.
I haven't seen that either.
It's good.
This is really interesting because the two movies feel like spiritual siblings of one another. Because again, and I will say that a lot of that
Murder by Death is also a band.
But I'm pretty sure it's a band that takes its name from this movie. I would be surprised to find that it came from anywhere else. This is, and I will say that a lot of the similarities come from the fact that there was, for the longest time, a very clear formula for murder mystery. It was the old dark house kind of formula. It's like you had a bunch of people. It's the Agatha Christie formula. Mm-hmm. It's like a bunch of people that end up together in this house, and it's usually a grand old house. The lights go out. Somebody dies. Who did it? I mean, it's a very tried and true formula. And these two movies both try to put their own spin on it. Murder by Death is very similar in structure, except that instead of characters from a board game, all of the characters are kind of facsimiles of popular detectives from literature. So you have your Miss Marples, you have your Sam Spade, you have your Hercule Poirot, your Nick and Nora Charles, and all of them are gathered together by an eccentric millionaire played by Truman Capote. And then basically are trying, they're all,
I should watch this. It's
fan-damn-tastic. And it, also similar in that a lot of its success comes from the strength of its cast. I mean, you have people like Peter Falk, Alec Guinness, David Niven, Peter Sellers, Maggie Smith.
Peter Sellers. I'm definitely going to see this then.
It's absolutely fantastic.
This is a classic. Murder by Death is absolutely a classic. In fact, I always put Murder by Death as a spiritual sibling of Fearless Vampire Killers, but I think this is actually a much better pairing, I think.
Do they go to a dinner party?
Yes.
Like in this one. See, that's, I think, why I love Clue so much, too, is like, who doesn't want to go to, I mean, I don't want anyone to get murdered, obviously.
Wait. You're going on record. You don't want people to get murdered.
I don't want people to get murdered at dinner
party. So your platform on murder is maybe don't get murdered?
Maybe don't get murdered at the dinner party that I'm at.
Does that mean that you're going to be the killer at the dinner party?
No, I would not be the killer. I would definitely, I feel like I
says the killer.
No, well,
come on,
maybe
guys.
I'd be the killer. I don't know. I'd have to be put in that situation. See how much a guy, see which weapon I was given. But I will say there's something about it, but like, who doesn't, I mean, keep the murder out of it. Who doesn't want to go to that dinner party with that group of people?
Right?
I mean, I don't want anyone to die, but I would. That seems like a great group.
But you do want to have a dinner party with a lot of eccentric people.
Who doesn't
people?
Love a nice dinner party?
Yeah.
I love dinner parties.
Oh, what a lovely tea party.
But the thing is, I don't love dinner parties. I want to go to a rowdy dinner party like that.
Dinner party where people die except that nobody dies.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'm trying to figure out what would make it rowdy if no one died.
in an abandoned, creepy house.
Yeah.
Like, or what, not abandoned.
With people making it's pretty much dead abandoned. Bodies. Yeah,
drinking shark fin soup.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's a politically incorrect dish.
Phone call from...
They had monkey's brains.
Monkey brains, too. Which, while popular in Cantonese cuisine, is not likely to be found in Washington, D.C. You're right. There are so many of these lines that just get burned into your brain, and you just remember them forever.
I've seen red herring in general, like, a lot. Like, yeah. Reference things. But communism is a red herring. Drop that anywhere at any time. People like that.
I feel like what we should do now.
I'm surprised that we've gone this far and nobody has said, let us in, let us in.
Let us out, let us out.
Which may be the greatest exchange in that film.
Yeah. Yes. I really want to.
The door's open.
I really want to do this now. I want to go up to people on the street during this election year and ask them if they believe that communism is a red herring and do it with a straight face. Do it with a. I feel like Megan, you would appreciate this, well, and maybe you can help us like spearhead this campaign.
So many people just go, no. It's not communism. It's democratic socialism. Read his pamphlet.
Or they would say it's not communism. He's just trying to make America great again.
Or they'd say no. The establishment is.
The establishment is just a red herring.
The establishment is just a red herring.
This is why this movie remains relevant to this day, folks.
It does remain relevant.
It's a political parody.
A brokered convention is just a red herring.
Brokered convention is just a red herring.
Goldman Sachs, just a red herring.
Donald Trump is just a red herring.
That actually may be very true.
No, I love this sexy maid character. I mean, who doesn't love
Oh, her? Colleen Camp. But this, I remember this was like one of my first movie crushes was Colleen Camp in that outfit. I was like,
It's like a quite provocative French maid's costume.
It's like, I don't know how these parts down here work yet because I'm just a kid, but like, I feel like they are that has something to do with it.
And when she's drinking the cognac and she's screaming, she's always like the helpless, like, please help me. I drank the cognac too. I'm gonna get poisoned.
I too drank the cognac, mom, too. I may have taken, you know what? Holy shit. Huge revelation about myself that I'm not super comfortable with, but I'm going to share it on the air like a normal person does.
I don't think we're going to be comfortable with this.
I just realized, I think the reason that even though I lived in Indiana, I took French in school was because of Colleen Camp.
Really?
That may have been the exact reason I was like, yeah, French is definitely the language I should learn, not Spanish. Although at the time I had no idea I'd be living in Texas, so kind of wish I could go back to seventh grade, Brian, and be like, learn fucking Spanish, you idiot.
I feel like that nobody was going to be able to use that French book the next year.
No. No.
Why is it stuck?
You think she gets strangled?
Well, I mean, we don't have to get into the fetishes that I developed.
Some people dig that.
We don't.
Ryan, I don't know your lifestyle.
No, 50 Shades of Mon Dieu. We don't have to get into that. That's not really the important part.
Hey, I'm not really comfortable with this, but I think she's the reason I used to put Grey Poupon on everything, and I do mean everything.
It's the reason all the baguettes in the house had a very hole in it. The point is...
And scene.
And scene, folks. This is the high level of comedy that you can expect from our show and is much better in the movies we talk about. What the hell were we talking about? Yes, Clue. So I want to go back to the...
I don't know why you're thinking about your prepubescent...
This is a... You got...
...for the French maid and Clue.
You know, we're joking, but this has become a very important episode for me, and I have a lot to kind of discern. And
was she like your first girl crush?
I think she might have been, because I literally...
I understand. She's a hot French maid.
She was gorgeous, and something about that outfit... Like even at the time, I was
Drew Barrymore and Tanya Roberts. Those were my two.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense because you're
any
old.
Attraction to this movie. That's where my experience ended. I didn't have anything where I was like,
you were like Mr. Green. I could turn that guy.
No, I don't think I had a crush on any of the guys. I think it
not until it came to NSYNC and Backstreet Boys.
No. I was never into that. I was always like Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford.
Sure.
Finger of Doom.
Temple of Doom. I always loved him. But no, this wasn't like I didn't get turned on by the French man woman, and I'm a heterosexual woman, so.
No, I get that. And all the men in this movie are distinctively comedic. I will say that for their looks.
But you know, it's an interesting game is out of all the guys, which one would you like? Which one would you want to date or whatever make
Wadsworth
in the movie?
Is that weird?
I feel like
is it weird that my answer was immediate?
No, I think it is Wadsworth, actually.
I like the propriety.
Christopher Lloyd's character is too pervy.
I like being waited on. I don't know. Guys, I'm only like we've had two revelations about me on this episode
maybe
already.
The original Mr. Body.
Interesting.
Know. Yeah.
Interesting. Lee Ving is
Really?
What are we doing right now?
Really not Tim Curry, guys?
No. It would be Tim Curry for me. I say Mr. Body, I'm referring to Tim Curry, the later revealed to be Mr. Body. I guess I should have clarified that. It's obviously Tim Curry.
And then the police officer that gets killed when he's like on the phone, he's like, all these people are having some kind of a party, and one of them's my old, and then it goes quick.
And then you start to realize that every person who shows up just to die has a connection to somebody in some way. So
wait, and Yvette was Miss Scarlet's one of her ladies.
One of her call girls. Yeah, for sure. That was their connection.
Yes.
One of my favorite things about this movie that ends up being something that we still see in movies today, where it's like there's this big elaborate plot. There's the red herrings, the things that you didn't realize were happening that were
communism
really happening.
Communism is just a red herring.
And then you have a character who literally lays out how everything was accomplished.
Yeah.
Like, you have what is essentially a flashback lasting about 10 minutes where he explains how everyone did exactly, which actually works better in this movie than it does in a lot of other films, because they're basically kind of laying out how you win the game of Clue. Is you're just like, you know, this person in this room with this weapon, which also, by the way, plays into why there are three different endings. It's not just a gag for theaters. It makes sense given the game that this movie is based on. But I love the fact that there's just literally a moment where Tim Curry just lays out how everything you didn't see happened. And no matter which ending you got, he still carries it up to a certain point. It's the point where he turns the lights back on and says, sorry, I didn't mean to scare anyone. You're a little late for that. Yeah, I could do this whole movie.
Or when they drink, Mr. Green slaps Mrs. Peacock.
Had to stop her from screaming.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts, too. Or when they're looking at the bullet hole and they, like, run. And they're like, sorry, excuse me. And they're still, like, being polite.
Or they're, like, trying to take...
Getting over there. It's really funny.
The courtesy bottleneck that happens in that moment. Yeah.
It's really funny.
Or when they're like, okay, now we have to go upstairs to explain this. And he's like holding Miss White by the hand and she like falls and he just keeps running. Yeah. That's what I'm talking. There's so many moments of just pure slapstick that are kind of sprinkled in amidst really witty dialogue. And I think that's why, like, no matter if you played the game, no matter if you, like, you're seeing this movie the first time you grew up with it, it still works. It works for every audience.
We've talked about the fact that the remake is in development hell. But
that's a direct quote from Wikipedia. It says development hell.
Yeah. Mm. So if it's in development hell, what if someone were to remake it, what would your concept of remaking it be? Because I have something in mind.
Maybe Grand Budapest Hotel Murder.
My choice is Wes Anderson.
Very nice.
Ooh, yeah, Wes Anderson Clue could be good. I would like to see a Soderbergh-esque reteaming of a bunch of the Ocean's 11 crowd.
Sure, sure.
I want to see George Clooney. I want to see that whole group, Matt Damon, playing all the various characters and doing their suave debonair bits.
Yeah, okay.
You know, Brad Pitt playing one of the zanier characters, Julia Roberts. I want to see that whole crowd doing this.
I don't know if I want that, actually.
Wes Anderson version.
No, thank you very much. No, I don't know if I want that group of actors, actually. I don't know. I don't really want to watch Julia Roberts in that. I think, I don't know what, again, I don't do this like you guys do, but I think, like, campier, they keep it.
Colleen Campier?
Yeah,
hello.
Exactly. I don't know. I would hope that if they remake it, it's not like a crappy Disney-fied glamorous remake. I hope it's like campy and silly like the original.
That's why my answer is, I feel incredibly obvious, the Coen brothers. Because if there are directors that I have ever trusted to make murder funny,
yeah,
it's the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
Like, so many of their early films are movies that are centered around somebody dying, sometimes horrifically, but
I could totally see Frances McDormand as Miss Peacock.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? And the craziest part is, Cargill, based on who they've worked with over the last few years, you're still going to get a lot of the same Ocean's cast in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could get Billy Bob Thornton in there.
Yes. William H. Macy would be Mr. Green, I feel.
Who's Wadsworth?
Ooh, that's a good question.
And who's the French maid? Sophia Vergara. Like, my thing is, like, French maid.
I love how you asked the question and then immediately answered it with authority. Who's the maid? Sofia Vergara. Well, we're moving on.
The maid has to be like an over-the-top sex symbol. Like
yes.
Like an exaggerated Jessica Rabbit woman.
Like over-the-top and... Like a 1990s Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Exactly.
Over-the-top and over on top. No, I get what you're saying. Yes. I absolutely understand what you're saying.
This is something only I can say. Yvette doesn't... Again, because I watched it recently, Yvette doesn't have quite as big of boobs as I remembered.
Like she had exactly the size boobs that I remember. Like, and I remember them well. Don't get me wrong.
Mustard. Don't let me Billy.
Why are you doing that to me? You know I'm just gonna do it.
I do.
Oh, it's like an echo. It's like this weird syndrome that I have.
I am your singing telegram.
Well, that actually brings us to the junk food pairing. Actually, before we do that, I want to mention real quick. We talked about Carrie Fisher almost being our Miss Scarlet. The role of Yvette was actually almost played by three very interesting people before Colleen Camp. Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Ooh.
I love Jennifer Jason Leigh.
I do as well.
Yeah.
Demi Moore.
Oh, yeah, because this is when she was young and just coming up and everyone wanted her for stuff because she was so fucking talented.
I also love Demi Moore, so I could get down with that.
I want to see if you guys can guess the third one just based on the era this was made. 1985, kind of an not as odd a choice as you might think, but not necessarily the first actress you think of because she's not necessarily known first as an actress. So
she's not known first
as an actress, but has done several acting roles. And keep in mind, it is 1985.
Dolly Parton?
Madonna.
Ah.
So Jennifer Jason Leigh, Demi Moore, and Madonna were all considered.
I was close.
You were very close. Very close indeed.
I think Madonna could do it too. I don't have a problem with any of those choices, actually.
Yeah.
Yvette.
Apparently, the reason Colleen Camp won the role is because she actually showed up to the audition in a French maid costume. Huh. So good for her. The junk food pairing, I feel like, is probably one of the easiest ones we've ever had to do. It's Swedish fish. Why Swedish fish? Because they are literally red herrings. There's a big bag of gummy red herrings.
This is a big batch of communism.
You know what? Communism is a red herring, and so is a bag of Swedish fish. So that's actually not the one I came in here with.
You know what? I am so proud of you right now. You have no idea.
That's a truly solid joke.
And it's funny because I feel like I lost you guys when I first said it. I was like, uh-oh. Hold on. Wait for it.
Truly solid joke.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
so, by the way, the only reason to ever lower yourself to eat a bag of Swedish fish would be in honor of this movie.
I love Swedish.
Swedish fish are amazing.
Yeah. What is wrong with
you? Now I've lost you. Good. We've come full circle.
This is why we're such good friends.
Trying really hard.
You bite your tongue. I love Swedish fish. Delicious. It's like debatably my favorite candy.
It's debated. Wait, who's debating you on your favorite candy?
People debate her on everything.
I understand debating on what's the best, but debating you on what your favorite candy is seems like the most asinine thing ever. Like, I must disagree that it's not your favorite candy.
Have you met
the record show.
Have you met the internet?
Oh, I have. Yes.
Well, it depends. I mean, okay. It's debatably my favorite candy. I'm going to leave it there.
I'm going to leave it exactly where it was a second ago.
Mic drop.
I'm just saying I've never actually met anybody that didn't love Swedish fish.
Well, hello.
We've got somebody else raising their hand. Shut the fuck up, peanut gallery.
There's another person here. Oh my gosh, you and I are the minority. Cargill and I are the only ones who love Swedish fish. Debatably my favorite candy.
Debatably her favorite candy, folks.
You're welcome.
We're minorities.
You're welcome for that. Brian,
yeah.
I'm glad I could give you that.
I appreciate that very much. If you guys would like to tell Megan what her favorite candy is, you can always do so on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema, or on Twitter at junkfoodcinema. You can also find our episodes on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. And
any nasty thing you have to say about me, about Donald Trump, feel free to send it to you and Cargill.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's rephrase. Send that to Cargill because I'm not sure I understand what a Trump is, but I am learning. So, yeah, go ahead and send that to Cargill.
This is very fun. And in all sincerity, everyone who hasn't seen Clue, you have to see it immediately because it's Truly, I think it's truly one of the greatest movies ever made.
So thank you so much for being our first guest and coming on the show.
Tell us more about your show and how people can find it.
I'm honored to be on your show.
Well, where can people who have enjoyed your company find you on the internet and on the radio?
Just go to @MeganMcCain on my Twitter, and all the information's there. And I know for all the my show's on terrestrial radio, but you can stream it on iHeartRadio too.
Nice. Cargill, where can people find you on the interweb?
You can find me on Twitter @MassaWyrm. That's MassaWyrm. Or at Facebook.com/MassaWyrm.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter @BryGuySalisbury. You can also find my page on Facebook, Facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. And so in all walks of life, guys, just remember that no matter what happens, no matter what challenges you face, flies are where men are most vulnerable.